Hey guys, it's Danielle. Welcome back to another Pure Root Wellness podcast, the show that discusses natural and holistic approaches for optimal health. So join me down the path towards finding the roots to your personal wellness. Hello to all my friends out there. It has been a minute since I have done a podcast, and truly, that is because I've been hard at work. I've been here in Clawson, Michigan, opening up for the past year, my brick and mortar, Pure Root Wellness. And if you don't know me or you haven't listened to previous podcasts, I am Danielle Colson. I am a doctorally prepared nurse practitioner in the critical care setting. I'm also a certified holistic nutritionist and the owner of Pure Root Wellness, which is a holistic wellness company located here in Michigan, where we really offer functional health consulting, holistic nutrition approaches to wellness and healing, and really looking at how IV hydration and vitamin injections can optimize your health, get your body back the raw material it needs to function pretty much the best of its capabilities and optimal wellness and health. So I could not be more excited to get back behind the microphone. I've been doing a lot of stuff, videos and things like that, and starting to increase kind of my YouTube situation. But the podcasts are something that I originally started and I just absolutely loved. I love being able to use a different tool, a different avenue to reach people that need to hear evidence-based nutrition, you know, advice and functional health ways to improve your life and get you guys back to feeling good, great, and you know, doing well. So this topic today, we're going to jump right into it. It is nutrition for mental wellness. And the approach really is to look at ways to nourish our mind and mood for optimal health. And truly, this topic alone, I will be speaking here in the next couple weeks at University of Detroit Mercy at their Wellness Expo. And this is the topic I really wanted to hone in on simply because we're struggling. We're struggling as a society to figure out how to be mentally well. And although that can be multifactorial, ultimately, people need to know the tools from a nutrition standpoint, from a functional health standpoint, how to, again, give the body the raw materials it needs to function well and do all of these processes, these physiologic processes that need to happen. So this is what we know, you guys. We're jumping right into it. We know that during COVID-19 in the pandemic, the number of anxiety and depressive disorders grew. They grew significantly. We went from about 193 million people worldwide to about 246 million people that had symptoms of depression that got worse or started. All right, that's about a 28% uptick in depression globally. Anxiety was also a big part of this as well, right? Anxiety disorders grew from about 298 million people to 374 million people suffering from anxiety. Again, this is about a 25% increase in people who maybe had some underlying anxiety or never had it before, and now all of a sudden it's just hitting you like a ton of bricks. Why do I feel anxious all the time? You know, why maybe you have gut issues coming from this anxiety, or the anxiety is causing the gut issues, you know, and causing other health ailments to maybe kind of show up. So we know that the pandemic exponentially worsened mental wellness, not just within the United States, but globally. And really, we need to sit back and ask ourselves, all right, so what contributes to mental unwellness? All right, that's the first question. That's where we start. And the CDC obviously says it's multifactorial, and we know this. You know, stressful life events, unemployment, drugs, alcohol, discrimination, having external or internal conflicts going on, abuse, trauma, neglect, loss of a loved one is a big one that can contribute to this mental unwellness, the social isolation was a huge part of the pandemic, and we saw this. We kind of knew this was going to happen. You know, us as human beings, we don't do well in isolation, okay? The most purest form of torture is isolating someone from the rest of the world. And ultimately, you will start to see mental illness occur. So the social isolation was a big one, especially during the COVID pandemic. And obviously, physical health conditions can contribute to mental illnesses as well. Not feeling well, just struggling from, you know, I've taken a bunch of pills, I have to go see a bunch of doctors. God, I wish I could just, you know, stop all of this craziness and feel better, wake up just feeling better. You know, it's all, again, multifactorial. It's not just one thing sometimes that we can pinpoint and put our thumb on to say, nope, that was it that caused, you know, your depression or your anxiety or, you know, all of these feelings to kind of arise. So knowing this, right, this came from the CDC. I sat here and I said, well, I don't see anything on this website about poor nutrition. How come we're, you know what I mean? Can nutrition contribute to mental unwellness? All right. The answer, the simple answer is yes. Yes, we know this. We just sometimes don't say it out loud or put it down on paper or put it, you know, on in the internet or say it. But yes, it can. It 100% can. And I'm going to explain why here. So we all know there's a connection. And when I say connection between nutrition and mental wellness, I'm talking more specifically about the gut-brain connection, okay? And there's a lot of different connections, accesses throughout your body. Each organ does not function by itself, okay? These organs don't sit there and say, nope, I'm just going to keep to myself and I won't communicate with any other part of the body. Not true. Fake news altogether, right? So this gut-brain connection is really the communication between the hormones, between the neurotransmitters, between other compounds, nutritional compounds, and communication through the gut microbiome. This is what I call the gut bugs, right? These bugs that reside pretty much from mouth all the way down to the booty. These bugs are constantly working for us to break down food, break down nutrients, break down, you know, crappy stuff that we put in our body, break down medications, you know, assess what's going on in the environment, assess your immune system through the gut. So this communication is the connection between the gut and the brain. The brain sends signals to the gut and the gut sends signals to the brain, you know, vice versa. And specifically, we talk about the neurotransmitter serotonin, right? Everybody knows this, you know, neurotransmitter, this compound in the body is kind of the happy mood neurotransmitter, or happy compound. And if that gets out of whack, oh man, that's when you start feeling depressed or maybe you have anxiety. But nobody talks about that 95% of this serotonin is made in the gut. It's not made up high in the brain. It's not a cerebral thing here where it needs to be manufactured there. It's in the gut. These gut bugs crank out the serotonin based on what you feed it, based on what you give these gut bugs to break down. And it doesn't just stop at anxiety, right? The neurotransmitter serotonin, it regulates your sleep. It can regulate your appetite. So if you're someone who's sitting there going, man, why isn't my metabolism budging? Serotonin can be an issue, right? If the gut bugs are not happy, if the gut microbiome is disheveled, the serotonin may be causing a dysregulation and causing you to have weird appetite cravings, all right? Mood, even pain sensation. Serotonin is the go-to when it comes to these body processes. Ultimately, if you influence this serotonin, because it's highly influenced by the billions of gut bugs within the GI tract, you then have to take a step back and say, well, why don't we just fix the gut bugs, which will then fix the serotonin and fix the mental wellness? You're right on track, all right? It's important to understand what we talk about with the root, right? This is the root. This is how you almost work backwards in order to work forwards when it comes to functional health, holistic nutrition, and finding the deep-seated root to the issue. But nonetheless, these gut bugs, I mean, they offer us optimal health and healing and wellness, but they can also, if they're not happy, really help with not healing and cause some issues for us, cause some dysfunctions for us as well, if we're not replenishing them and feeding them what they need to be fed. You know, they protect us. They protect us against toxins. They help us to reduce inflammation. They absorb nutrients, again, to be used for metabolism. They activate these neural pathways, again, between the gut and the brain to make sure that all of the communication is happening at a timely manner. The right communication is happening. The right neurotransmitters are going where they need to go. It's just a beautiful harmony between all of it. And if one piece of the puzzle is not there, then we suffer. We suffer in an essence of having symptoms of feeling anxious, having symptoms of, you know, being depressed or, you know, struggling through something, you know, mentally. So the big picture kind of is, if your gut health is poor, it seems the opportunity for mental wellness can be just as poor. All right. So my next question, I guess, that this is how I work, this is how my mind kind of, you know, works in a step-by-step approach, but I sit here and go, well, what foods harm the gut microbiome then? I need to know, right? That let's find out, let's eliminate those foods first before I start adding things on and you know, kind of going wild with it. Tell me what foods actually harm the gut microbiome, and maybe I can back off, if not stop, ingesting those. That's it. That's the first step. That is the ticket, right? The processed and ultra-processed foods. These are number one, all right? These foods will always 100% harm the gut microbiome. And what does processed and ultra-processed foods mean? What does it look like? The big takeaway is I ask myself, how far away removed is this food from its natural form? If this food, and I'm doing air quotes here, if this food doesn't even resemble what this meal or what this, you know, food, again, that I'm going to put in my mouth should look like, it is processed, hands down, right? It should always look somewhat close to how it actually existed in nature. The other way I tell people, the big, you know, down and dirty way of seeing if it's processed or ultra processed is, technically, does it come in a box or a package? Things that come in a box or a package and can sit on a shelf for 3 years, there is no way your body will know what to do with a, again, air quotes, food that can't be broken down just sitting on a shelf. How can your body break it down, right? So that's another kind of big, you know, 10,000 view of, okay, maybe that's ultra processed, maybe not. And then generally I tell people, if it's got more than like 10 ingredients in it, or you truly can't pronounce those ingredients, it's fair to say that that's mainly probably a processed or ultra processed food. So looking at that, looking at each meal, how processed is it? All right. And we'll get into the next step of what to do with that if you are eating these processed or ultra processed foods, you know, many times throughout the day or even once during the day. How do we reverse that? How do we take this processed food, you know, consumption and turn it into a non-processed food consumption? We'll talk about that. But other foods that harm the gut microbiome, sugar and artificial sugars, you guys, we know sugar is crap for us. We know, we're not stupid. You know, you have a beautiful cake, you have a cupcake in front of you, you have a brownie in front of you. You know, looking at that food, it's not necessarily going to be the healthiest option for you. But sometimes life hands you a cupcake on your birthday and you better eat the cupcake because life is too short if you don't. Okay. But I guess my point is, when I talk about sugars, especially with my clients and in some of my programs, I'm talking about the hidden sugars. Okay. If you've committed and you've said, listen, I've negotiated in my mind, it is a birthday party and I'm going to eat that cupcake or I'm going to have a slice of cake or some ice cream, you know, every once in a while, and it's not the staple of an everyday after meal event, absolutely. That is what, that right there is what makes the world go round. That is what makes the life a journey, is enjoying moments within community and enjoying little sweets and treats here and there. What I'm talking about is the hidden sugars that add up during the day. So what is in your barbecue sauce? And you know, you put that on some chicken or what have you, and then you went ahead and made a pasta salad, and oh my God, I didn't realize in the Italian dressing, there's a boatload of sugar in that too. And then, you know, I'm going to have a nice little beverage. Oh my God, I didn't realize there's a little bit of sugar in this beverage. It adds up. It compounds up. And eventually the gut microbiome sits there and goes, I can't break down all this sugar. And that's when all the other dysregulation starts to kind of happen with insulin and glucose and hormones and leptin and ghrelin. And you know, that's a whole nother podcast. But my point is, sugar really drives inflammation, drives these gut microbiomes to, or these gut bugs to really just kind of say, listen, I can't process, I can't take care of all of this. It's just too much. And sometimes they die off, these gut bugs, actually. That's the wild thing. When you start getting actual die-off of some of these gut bugs, that's when other symptoms can come down the pipe, and sugar is a contributing factor to that. And artificial sugars are no safe haven either, right? We're actually finding that some of these artificial sugars are even more detrimental than actual sugar themselves, like cane sugar. You know, these artificial sugars like aspartame, and, you know, they have NutraSweet in them, and all of these little, you know, they're super, super sweet products, but they're fake. They're not real. They're chemicals. Someone in a lab created them to make it taste this type of way. All right. So very detrimental to the gut microbiome. Dairy. Okay. I'm not going to go too hard into dairy right now, because some dairy, you know, can actually have some decent benefits to the gut health, but a fair majority of the dairy, i.e. cow's milk, none of us adults, humans, should be drinking cow's milk really beyond a certain age for many reasons that I won't go into in this podcast. But dairy can be very inflammatory for a lot of people. So if there's inflammation, the gut bugs are not happy, they're not working well, we need to, you know, really look into that and reassess what dairy may be more beneficial than others. Low quality animal protein is another real big, I guess, just dagger to the gut health itself. I know there's a big push for more protein, high protein diets. And I don't disagree in an essence with incorporating protein, animal protein specifically, into the diet. But I think we need to be very careful about both in this one, quality and quantity of animal protein, because more is not better for a lot of people. So, you know, looking at a low quality animal protein can actually be quite detrimental to the gut bugs. And fried foods and stuff like that, you know, the foods that we know that are like, oh, this doesn't exist in nature, the donuts, the Fritos, the microwavable pizzas, the, you know what I mean, the Jell-Os, like none of this exists in nature, right? It's processed, and our gut bugs just truly don't know what to do with it, and they kind of shut down for us. One little avenue that I like to remind a lot of my clients is when we eliminate food groups, okay? Personally, I feel as though this can be very damaging to the gut microbiome, to your gut health. And more so, you know, I've had clients come in and they're trying to maybe lose some weight. They're trying to rev up their metabolism. And they say, well, a few years back, I cut out all the carbs. I got rid of all my carbs and man, did I lose weight. I felt great. I looked great. I should do that again. And I think there is a nice little threshold for a lot of people to what their carbohydrate intake should be. some people's threshold is a little lower, some is a little higher in regards to what your metabolism does once you reach a certain point of carbohydrate ingestion. But eliminating completely carbs or eliminating all fats, healthy fats, I think we're doing our gut bugs a disjustice simply because the bugs that know how to break down a carbohydrate, let's say, or break down a healthy fat, if you eliminate that food group, you then begin to die off or eliminate the gut bugs that were able to break that food down and utilize its healthy properties that were within, you know, sprouted grains and, you know, whole hearty grains and healthy, you know, omega-3 fats and things like that. So I think we need to be very careful when eliminating food groups, because the reality is, when and if, it's usually a matter of when, we reintroduce those carbohydrates or healthy fats back into the diet, we will not have the necessary microbes to be able to then process that. And then people go back and say, see, I'm bloated, I feel icky, I don't feel good, my digestive system is off. And I want to be like, we don't have the gut bugs there anymore. We've got to figure out and reintroduce the right microbiome again for you to be able to break that down. So don't think you can go months without, you know, healthy carbs and then pound a bunch of spaghetti and think that your body is going to, you know, efficiently start breaking down, you know, a very carbohydrate-rich food. So eliminating food groups, I really try and err on the side of caution with that. And obviously that depends on the patient, the person, what they're going through. You know, sometimes, you know, low FODMAPs are needed and required to a certain extent. But alcohol, very harmful to the gut microbiome. Again, we kind of all know this, right? We know that alcohol doesn't do a body good in essence, but that doesn't mean, again, life doesn't come at you sometimes and, you know, you want to enjoy certain moments and that requires a little drinky poo here and there. So, but just know excessive, you know, daily intake of alcohol will ultimately degradate and really disrupt what the gut bugs are doing in there. And I always have to plug this in, even when I'm talking to you know, clients and just anyone really. It's not food what I'm about to talk about, because the title that we were talking about was foods that harm the gut microbiome. But I have to always tell people and be a good steward here. Antibiotics, right? There's three big ones that I usually tell people that can really disrupt the gut microbiome, if not kill off a lot of the bugs. And antibiotics are one of them. Now, this does not go without saying, if you need antibiotics and you have got an infection that is rip-roaring and, you know, you're ill, please use antibiotics as a tool to allow your immune system to get over the hump of the infection. You know, try and ask your provider, hey, what's the shortest time frame that I can, you know, be on these antibiotics and still make sure that I'm getting over the hump of the infection. But just know, with that bout of antibiotics, you're going to have die-off of the microbiome. We know this through testing. There's lots of companies out there. Zoe is a UK company that really looks at the gut microbiome and really helps to optimize your health. They had one of their coworkers basically had to go on antibiotics, and he'd worked so hard to get his gut microbiome up and well, and he was thriving. And then he truly got an infection, needed some antibiotics, and tested himself shortly after. And it took months before he could get his gut health back up and running and close to what he was, you know, prior to taking the antibiotics. So just know these are potent medications. If you do not need an antibiotic, i.e. the common cold, you know, in adults, the majority of people just have a virus. You have a cold virus. No antibiotic in the world is ever going to touch a virus, is never going to kill off a virus. So if you do not need, you know, you need to have that discussion with your physician, obviously, and okay, do you think this is bacterial? Should we check? You know, but if it's a virus, do not go running to the doc to get that antibiotic, okay? And they truly should be good antibiotic stewards as well, because we're creating a problem with antibiotic resistance, true and be told. And this is the critical care hat that I wear and that I see when we have people come in, and I sit there and I go, man, we have to go to big heavy hitter antibiotics because this bug that they have in their body is resistant to all these other antibiotics, and it can get quite scary. So that's my little critical care soapbox and how I morph that into things that harm the gut microbiome. But even over-the-counter stuff, you guys, right? The antacids, the proton pump inhibitors like Protonix, over-the-counter NSAIDs, ibuprofen, Motrin, Benadryl, these are all medications you can get over the counter, but they are just destroying these gut bugs and how they function and how they work. So just think twice. You know, I'm not saying you got to tough through all these things and you know, take a completely natural approach to every aspect of illness or injury. But I think we need to do a better job of really looking at the big picture and saying, hey, can I kind of work through this? Is this, you know, is something that I really need? And utilizing, you know, your healthcare providers, your naturopathic providers, to really guide you a little bit, I think is the success and the take home of that. But do not take my word for it, right? You know, if you don't want to take my word for it, I'm okay with that. Let the research really kind of start to speak for itself, and it's starting to, all right? There was a recent study, and this is like 2022, out of Brazil, and they showed, and this was like a hearty, I want to say they were like 11,000 people in this study, and they did it over a course of maybe 18 months or so, but these Brazilians were studied, and it showed that individuals who ate more ultra-processed foods show higher incidence of cognitive decline. That's real, okay? And again, we kind of sit back and we should know this. Like innately, I feel like we know this. When we eat that cheeseburger and fries, we know it's not going to help us extend our life. But now we're starting to see it on paper. We're starting to see it as data. We're starting to see the numbers and really be able to sit there and go, man, okay, we know this to be true. We need to step back and really look at how we can start to fix this. You know, dopamine, I'm going to shift gears here a little bit because we've been talking about serotonin. And dopamine is another neurotransmitter that really plays a part in A, your mental wellness, but B, how our dopamine and our dopamine receptors are affected by food, specifically processed food, okay? And again, this neurotransmitter, it gives us the feel-goods. It's kind of a feel-good neurotransmitter, but it promotes an addictive feeling towards processed foods. So when I have clients come to me and they're like, Danielle, I have no idea why I can't say no to this food. I raise my hand. I go, I know. A lot of times it's not you, it is the dopamine, it's the serotonin, it's the gut bugs all communicating saying, fill this receptor, go ahead, I want you to eat that. That is what's going to fill my receptor. And it takes a hell of a lot of willpower to sit there and fight off these neurotransmitters that are literally just looking to fill that receptor due to sometimes an addictive feeling. And that is the ultra-processed food, is that addiction, all right? So I don't necessarily take it 100% away from the client, but I sit there and say, listen, this is your physiology. You're trying to go above and beyond the physiology of your body wanting what it's used to having. And it can be a difficult process overcoming that. And truly, that's when we start to work on filling that receptor with a different type of dopamine. I don't even want to use the word high, but a dopamine food. That you know, and that's why people, when they start eating healthier foods, they crave those healthier foods because they're filling that dopamine receptor in association with a healthier version of that food, okay? Other studies. There was one study out of Brigham's and Harvard showing a greater basically ultra-processed food intake. And this, they focused on more so artificial sweeteners. This was associated with an increased risk of actual depression. This study was actually done in nurses, which I'm not shocked, right? We really don't take care of ourselves, especially when it comes to being at work. A fair majority of us don't take bathroom breaks. We won't take, and you know, our actual lunch hour to calm the mind, slow down, eat food, eat healthy food. We are constantly trying to crank up the caffeine, crank up the energy, crank up just to get through the 12, 13, 14 hour plus shifts, all while caring for maybe an individual we've never met before in our entire life. So, you know, shout out to my nurses. I hear you. I'm with you. I've been there. I'm still there sometimes, some days. And truly, I have to cognitively tell myself when I'm in the critical care some days, okay, Danielle, you literally have done nothing for yourself. You've been up since 4 a.m. It is now 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You need to step away, take a break for a minute. Someone else can take over and do something that you know will replenish your health, your body, to keep you going, you know, optimally here in the next, you know, whatever hours of your shift. So understanding that even people in healthcare, sometimes we're the worst culprits, right? we think what we're doing is going to keep us going and, hey, it's okay. You know, I'll eat healthy tomorrow. And the reality is each time we keep setting the tone for ingesting ultra-processed foods or foods with artificial sweeteners or beverages, we're increasing our risk of more depression and anxiety and mental unwellness. And really, if you look at it, you know, the biggest association between ultra-processed food and mental health, it really may be explained by the non-nutritive components within the ultra-processed foods. So we're talking about aspartame, we're talking about MSG, we're talking about all these compounds, chemical compounds that were made in a lab, and their ability to dysregulate neurotransmitters in the body, like dopamine, like norepinephrine, you know, which is our fight or flight hormone, like serotonin, and it just makes sense. These are non-nutritive. I love how this study talked about it being a non-nutritive compound, not even food, right? It's a chemical, and it has no nutritional value whatsoever, and it has a profound effect on all of these hormones, all of these neurotransmitters, all of these physiologic processes. And we sit here and kind of go, man, well, why don't I feel good? Why am I down? Why do I feel anxious sometimes? And I just don't know why. This could be the underlying root cause. So enough with the doom and gloom, right? Let's get into natural strategies that boost our mental health. Okay, I know now what can harm it. All right, check. I've got that. We need to start making mental notes to start removing some of those bad or harmful sources that don't do my gut health any good. But what can I do to boost, you know, natural strategies? I always start with the number one focus, you guys, and that is a whole food, plant-focused approach to meals. And when I tell people this, they look at me and they're like, oh God, here we go. I don't want to be vegetarian. I don't want to be vegan. I don't want to be keto. I don't want to be, I hear you. I don't want any of it either. Okay. I want people to look at food from a whole food mindset and have a plant-focused approach. That doesn't mean plant-based. Plant-focused means that 75%, you know, whatever, your plate, the majority of your plate has to be plant-based whole food. And then the rest of the plate, enjoy. Enjoy maybe something that has a little bit of process to it, but you know the majority of the meal that you just ate was providing nutrients to your body, was providing the good raw materials that it needs to exist and function well, okay? So eating foods closest to their natural state. And what I tell people is, if you're just starting out doing this, people are sometimes like, I don't even know where to begin. What does this mean? Okay, do I have to throw out everything that is not whole food, plant focused? My suggestion would be yes. You know, go through the pantry, go through the fridge, go through the, you know, the freezer, go through the cupboards, and really start looking at stuff. When you start looking at everything, you're like, oh my God, half the meals, three fourths of the meals I eat during the day are all processed garbage. And you sit here and go, okay, how can I start to clean this up? Start with picking one meal per day, all right, and find a way to remove the ultra-processed or the processed aspect from that meal. So I don't care if it's breakfast, lunch, dinner. I don't care what it is, okay? Figure out what meal you want to pick and stick with that meal and say, you know what? This whole week, I'm going to pick lunch, and my lunch is really, I don't want any process through it. I don't want any processed foods through it. And eat that whole food plant-focused approach. And things will start going well. I promise you. You'll feel a different type of way. Your body will thank you. And ultimately, you start really kind of dripping or trickling that into the other meals. And it starts to become innate. It starts to become something where you really don't even think about it, because now you're gaining momentum, you're gaining education, you're gaining knowledge on what the meal and the plate should look like from a whole food plant-focused approach. That's usually where I start the majority of my clients out when we're really trying to find a happy transition, a smooth transition into what the plate and what the meal should look like. The second natural strategy to boost mental health is to heal the gut, right? If you take anything away besides the whole food plant-focused approach, is healing the gut, you guys. These gut bugs can work for us or work against us. And all you need to do is feed them, get them in the system and feed them properly, and they will reward you handsomely, all right? So when I say and I tell people, let's get a quality probiotic on board, that doesn't always necessarily mean we jump right to a supplement probiotic. Okay, there are natural foods out there that I'm sure you've heard of, you know, with kimchi and fermented foods and miso, tofu, you know, plain Jane yogurt, right? None of the gooey gels and fruits that are in there. Add your own fruit. These are the bugs. This is the probiotic, okay? The actual bug that you're ingesting to plant the seed, if you will. And then feeding those bugs is important. Well, how do I feed my gut bugs? You feed them through fiber, but you also feed them through food diversity, okay? The more diverse your food options are that you are choosing, you have now required your microbiome to be just as diverse, because in order to break that diversity of food down, you need a diverse species of bugs, okay? So feeding the gut bugs fiber, which whole ground flax seeds, sprinkle that crap on everything, you guys. It has omega-3s, it has fiber, it has roughage to create good bowel movements, it feeds the gut bugs, it makes everything just happy, healthy, and optimized. Whole grains, whole sprouted grains, right? Don't eliminate food groups. Enjoy those whole grains. If you actually have celiac disease and you cannot have anything with gluten in it, then that's a different story. We need to find something that can cater to that specific type of you know, process. But if you are not gluten positive, if you don't have celiacs, you don't need to be eliminating all gluten out of all things, okay? I want to preface it with that. And sometimes people who think they have a gluten sensitivity are actually allergic to either the wheat, not actually the gluten, but the wheat in the food, or the yeast sometimes that's in the bread itself. So really looking, you know, to the body, I help clients find different ways to really figure out, okay, is it the gluten? Is it the yeast? Is it the wheat? What is it? Simple little ways to really figure out what is going on specifically with you. But green bananas are a huge fibrous, the gut bugs love it. There's certain gut bugs that just love that green ripe banana. If you can't stand the taste of just eating it alone, chuck it in a smoothie, blend it up with a bunch of berries, boom, you're feeding the gut bugs, keeping them working for you. And the last natural strategy to boost mental health is quality sleep. This is so overrated, you guys. The ability to get good quality sleep we as a society, not everybody, but the majority of us, we suck at getting good quality sleep. And I get it. I'm there with you. I have a kid. I have to be up at 4 a.m. some days to be in the surgical ICU for, you know, all day, and then put my kid down by, you know, a certain time, and then be back at it up again the next day. It's challenging. It's hard. But finding the right sleep hygiene, which is huge, that includes being off the screen for at least 1 hour before bedtime. And don't act like we all don't do it. I'm even guilty of it as well, right? We get the kids down, everyone's had dinner, everything's cleaned up, all the animals are, you know, there, whatever, in the house. And finally, you get a moment to just lay on the couch, lay on the bed, and just scroll through that social media like you've never scrolled before, right? And it relaxes you a little bit. You find some funny little memes. You send it to a couple of friends. I get it. But you need to know, if this is happening an hour before bedtime, you're not going to get that optimal sleep that your body is so desperately looking for. And a lot of my clients ask me, you know, okay, well, what are some natural things that I can do to really help optimize my sleep-wake kind of cycles and make sure that, you know, all of my hormones are getting regulated the right way? And I do have people that come in and say, well, melatonin didn't work for me. Melatonin doesn't work for everybody, but you've got to use it right before you can actually say melatonin doesn't work for me. Okay. Personally, for a lot of my clients, I pair melatonin, and it doesn't have to be a high dose melatonin. I pair melatonin with a magnesium glycinate and an L-theanine, which ultimately will help promote natural relaxation and sleep regularity. So really using, again, getting back to the raw materials of what your pineal gland needs to release the melatonin, to start bringing down the cortisol at night, rise up the melatonin. It needs other properties with it to function the way it's supposed to function, all right? So the big three strategies: whole food, plant-focused approach, heal the gut, and do not eliminate the power of quality sleep, all right? Ultimately, the goal is, you guys, to use food as medicine, all right? We've been saying this for hundreds of years, right? And Hippocrates, right? Food is medicine, you know, use food as thy medicine and medicine as thy food. We get it. But what can we use to help with maybe anxiety or depression, like specific foods that help really overcome how our mental wellness really needs to go? So oatmeal, quinoa, whole sprouted grains, these actually increase your serotonin, you guys. These are specific foods that help in the gut crank up that serotonin to give you that good, that feel good, you know, feeling and entity. Crank them out. Again, when I tell people and they're like, oh, I don't have any grains and stuff, I'm like, you're missing out on an opportunity to really rev up your serotonin here. Oysters, cashew, wild salmon help actually reduce anxiety. Okay, these are foods, very applicable foods that you can incorporate in your daily meals. And mind you, they're whole food, plant-focused usually, right? That can bring down the anxiety, chill everything out, and rebalance the hormones and neurotransmitters like they need to be rebalanced. Bananas, I go back to bananas, man. Bananas are a big one for mental wellness. They actually, and I didn't know this until I really started kind of looking things up a little bit and using, you know, my research. But bananas are a natural beta blocker, which if you're in medicine, we give out beta blockers like it's candy, you know, especially in the ICU. Everyone's heart rate is 152 and they're in AFib and we've got, you know, AFib RVR and we've got issues and we're trying to beta blockade them down so the heart rate, you know, comes down to more of a normal, a normalized heart rate, you know, so the body can perfuse and get good oxygen. But bananas are a natural beta blocker, which slow the heart rate and promote a calmer state of mind. Now, you'd have to eat a lot of bananas, because then, of course, my mind goes, I'm like, oh my God, what if somebody's already on a beta blocker and they have a banana and da 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 da? My mind goes wild, right? You'd have to eat a boatload of bananas to really get you know, a profound blockade from a cardiac, you know, perspective. But these are foods you can literally have on hand to sit there and go, you know what, I'm about to give a big speech. I'm about to interview for a new job. I'm about to take a big test, okay? These are ways to calm down the mind, calm down the heart rate, bring it back to kind of more of a natural homeostatic position, all because you ate a freaking banana. It's amazing. I love it, right? So bananas, key. Blueberries. I always go back to blueberries because blueberries, if you were to eat one fruit that had all of the goodness, I say an accessible fruit. I mean, there's tons of good high potency antioxidants like goji berries and stuff like that. But blueberries. Blueberries are key for a lot of natural approaches to just optimal wellness. And blueberries actually help to reduce anxiety and promote better memory and cognitive function, which we've known this for a while. So again, if you're about to go into a nice big test and or an interview, or you know, you got a long day ahead of you, blueberries and bananas are going to be your number one go-to to really crank through the day, get all the anxiety out and down, and calm the thing, you know, calm your body down. These are key. These are big tips. This is key, you guys, to really utilizing food as medicine. And lastly, we're starting to talk a little bit more about this, but turmeric. Okay, turmeric has a compound in it called curcumin, and this is an antioxidant that keeps the gut bugs happy. It helps to increase serotonin and dopamine that we've been talking about this entire podcast, right? So utilizing turmeric every day, if you can, sprinkling it on food, taking it as a supplementation, and obviously there's better supplementation than others and what it should be paired with for better bioavailability. But nonetheless, turmeric is a beautiful compound that can help really mental wellness and well-being, and use food as a way of medicine. So what is the take home? All right, let's wrap it up here. Let's give you the down and dirty. Here is the take home. Every meal is an opportunity. This is what I need you to think. Every meal is an opportunity not only to improve your physical health, but your mental wellness as well. That's huge. Every single meal you eat, you are giving yourself the opportunity, if you choose the foods, the right foods that you know your body will be able to utilize, you can improve your physical health and your mental wellness as well. The reality is when we feel good, we do good, all right? We do good in life. We do good at jobs. We do good at relationships. We do good in community, all right? That is, you talk about an underlying root cause, that is it. When we feel good, we start to do good. How do you feel good? You need to start using each meal as an opportunity to improve your physical health and your mental health. Use food as medicine, and this drives the physiology really into a new wellness journey just for you, okay? This is it. This is the big picture. This is truly, I think, the most simplified way I could kind of break down a very complex topic, right? Nutrition for mental wellness. I know that a lot of the big universities and a lot of big companies are really delving into the research around this. And I truly can't thank them enough, because this is what I teach and preach and do. And this is what I want people to know, so they can better their lives, better their health, better their mental wellness for an already, you know, horrible couple of years in a pandemic in regards to what that has done and how our mental wellness looks. Again, not even at a national standpoint, but a global standpoint, right? This is not just here at home. This is throughout the world. People are struggling with mental unwellness. And if we can get to the foundation first, using food, using natural properties that the world and the earth gave us, and then being able to say, okay, now, you know, I can look at this medication, or I can see this if that's even needed. Hey, maybe I changed my physiology so well that my body was just optimized now, and I don't have those periods of anxiety, or, you know, I'm having less and less feelings of depression. I've been able to work through them using just other modalities of natural, kind of a naturopathic or functional health approach. So I hope this was helpful in really, again, just seeing the connection between nutrition and mental wellness. And please leave any comments down below. I love seeing them. Share this if you know if anyone is struggling, you know, with their mental well-being, or you know, going through a bunch of anxiety, depressive type, you know, feelings. Send this their way. This truly gives a beautiful foundation for a lot of people to sit there and go, wow, I did not even consider that the food I'm eating may be contributing to how I am feeling or what is going on. On that note, I hope this podcast was helpful for you guys and trying to find a nutritional means for your mental wellness. I hope you all are well and be well. Thanks for listening to another Pure Root Wellness podcast. To learn more about ways to optimize your health using nutritional and supplemental support, visit my website at purerootwellness.net, where you'll find more videos and links regarding holistic approaches to your nutrition, supplement knowledge, and health topics. Be well, friends. The content distributed in this podcast is intended for informational purposes only and is not intended for medical advice.